Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's up, everyone? Derek Evers and Chris Robbins with Nothing Urgent. I do have to say,
please,
that's L Lover. That's L Lover on the intro there, and he just came out with a track this week with your boy Tim Presley from White Fence.
It's pretty good. It's definitely different.
I shouldn't say this week. It was actually last week, but I'm like in this time warp mode because last week I felt like we were gone for the entire time.
Is Al Lover also a California artist?
Yes. Yeah. Nah. He is. That's where they're all from.
That's Cali boys. Boys of Summer.
He's the Bay, San Francisco. I'm going to talk to Joe, our producer, afterwards. I want to kick in harder with that beat. We got to figure out some way to maybe jack up the volume.
Subwoofer, maybe? Or something?
Yeah. Because then my voice comes in and it's like, you know.
This is Derek Evers. I'm from Wisconsin.
So how did... I'm not from Wisconsin, although I do kind of have a Midwest voice.
We have a very good show for our listeners today.
I mean,
as always.
I know. I was going to say, we've been kind of killing it. Not to pat ourselves on our back,
yeah,
but
well, you got to pat every.
We
now
have
and
been
then.
Killing it with the guests. I mean, if you missed 2 weeks ago, we had Anthony Kennedy.
We didn't actually have
not have him, but we had one of his close school friend, school boy, school
roommates. I think they actually were, and then he was a clerk on the court too. In the 60s.
And we spoke to him the day that they made the sweeping decision.
And then we had Dirty Beaches on.
Yeah, I know, the same
but let's
day.
Talk about today's show.
Yes, let's. Well, who should I discuss first? Because we had a flip-flop of the arrangement. We have Patrick Stickles from Titus Andronicus coming in to talk about his singing Telegrams.
No slouch.
No, definitely no slouch. I mean, he's been dropping a few videos, too, so I think we'll play some of those songs in between. And then we have Chris Mooney, who is a contributor to Climate Desk and Mother Jones and the host of Climate Desk Live. And
he's an expert on the intersection between global warming and politics, so we're going to talk about that.
I'm hoping he can let me know if it's going to be really hot in August, because we're like, it's been a pretty hot and humid July, and like I'm just worried about what to look forward to in August.
You were camping last weekend, right?
I was.
You look kind of bronze, I gotta say. I'm not gonna say that I'm worried about your health or your skin, but you're looking a little bronze.
We talked about this last night. I don't know what my grandma's side of the family is, but it's definitely darker.
Don't talk
than
about our
else.
Pillow talk on air, Derek. We said no pillow talk on
but,
the radio.
But yeah, it's definitely I'm a little on the dark side after camping. It was hot and moist like it is here in New York, but we got a lot of mosquitoes because of that.
You were in Vermont,
yeah,
right?
We went to Vermont. We went to Bourne Lake, and I kept making tried to make Jason Bourne references, and I kept calling it Bond Lake instead of
Wait, is that how it's spelled?
It is. I don't think there's an E at the end of Jason Bourne.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
think this one had an E, but it had a U in there.
Huh.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a very nice, relaxing time until it rained, and then I had to move my tent out of a puddle. But that's, you know.
I always enjoyed camping, but now that I just can't bring myself to leave the city very often, you know?
Yeah, I try to get you to leave, and then you decide to stick around.
Because I always feel like I'm missing something, you know? I guess that's a sad way to live if you're always missing something.
You can't feel that way. That feeling
it's like
will
a snake
go away.
Eating its tail,
yeah,
you know?
That feeling will start to go away after a while. As you get older, like myself, you start to, like, it's the opposite. It's like, do I really need to leave the house to do this? Like, can't I just, like, phone it in?
Do I really need to leave the bed to make this bowel movement? No.
No. No.
I haven't. It's been a while since I've been camping, actually. And it was like, you know, I was a Boy Scout for a while, so that was like canvas tents. Like, you could only stay a week at this camp because it was so rustic. You had to like pee and poop in a hole in the ground. I got bit by a wolf spider.
That's what this
thumb.
Camping was.
Yeah.
There's no anything around. You got to.
You weren't in canvas tents though. That's pretty miserable.
No, we were in. I mean, what we were in tents that we had to bring in with us.
Yeah.
You know, 4 mile hike.
No, right.
Yeah. I did do the canvas tent hike. Canvas tent camping. When I was a Boy Scout.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that?
It was fine, although now I look back, I can really see how a lot of people would have their first homoerotic experience in that setting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, not me, but I just remember there was a lot of... It could just be like guys, you know, like just the coming of age story of like teenage boys. But just remember a lot of like uncomfortable situations, you know, not with the elders.
A lot of long
either.
Showers.
Yeah, you know.
Hey guys, we're going to go camp at this hotel by the airport this weekend. I know you guys wanted to go to Vermont, but we're going to go to the Howard Johnson.
I do believe, I mean, I did ask you to go camping, and I think your response was, I need to work on my ulcer this weekend.
Yeah, well, my stomach was hurting me for a while, but I did some reading, and I laid low like I was supposed to. I read the new George Saunders book. It's not new. It came out in January, but anyone who hasn't read that, it's called The 10th of December, I believe. It's very, very good.
Is it about the 10th of December?
One of the stories is called that, but it's really just a collection of short stories. He's like, I don't know, there's this huge New York Times Magazine cover story on him a few months ago about how he's like the greatest living fiction writer, sort of. I don't know if you're up on the fiction.
That sounds like an exciting July 4th.
It sounds
weekend.
Like camping, yeah. That sounds like camping.
So I know it's weird. This has been like a slow, it's just a slow news time.
But it was weird. It's like summer creeps up on you, but nothing is happening.
Yeah, but it's also,
you know,
like,
it's like the weirdness of moving quickly but not moving at all at the same time.
And the sad part about it is you think about the context of time and it's July already, man. It's almost the middle of July.
That's what I mean. It's like I'm not even like summer just happened, right? Just started, but now it's the middle of July. So really it's almost over. The days are getting shorter.
Well, they've been getting shorter for almost a month.
Exactly.
But next week I get to go to Comic-Con, so.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that.
A little bit about Comic-Con. I'm really excited to go to the Grimm, the television show.
Derek
Grimm.
Likes really terrible television shows that a handful of people enjoy.
And Grimm is one of them, and they're going to have a, what do they call those? I can't ever think of them.
Meet and greet.
Yeah, what a,
slobber and handshake.
Something along those lines.
Fawn and smile.
In the convention center. Adult Swim will be there, Comedy Central, all the standbys that I want to go to. But yeah, Grimm is the dark horse. That's what I'm kind of, you know, excited about.
Because we went for the first time last year, and I was blown away how it's not really about, and this is naive, I guess, but it's not about comics anymore. That's really a misnomer.
No, it's far from it.
Although it's television con, basically.
Yeah. It's definitely sitcom con. Although there is a...
Or just, you know, fantasy. I mean, it's just television.
Yeah. And movies.
And
they
movies.
Do, they definitely do a lot of movies. Yeah. There's a nice... there is a contingent of comic people that are there selling, like retailers. So that's really interesting. If you can go there as a collector and want to buy a lot of type stuff.
Were you
like
ever
that.
Into comic books as a kid?
No, not really. I was into baseball cards, yeah. But not.
I like bought one comic and I was like, cool. And then I like sat down and I was like, this is dumb. And then I just went outside.
I mean, it's the type of thing that I would be excited about if I like collected and got like number one and never read it and stuck it in like a plastic sleeve.
But where's the fun in that?
No, I know.
Where's the fun in just like hermetically sealing off all these
well,
toys?
You know what's the weird thing? Is like my dad and my uncle, they grew up and they had all of these like crazy, like Monster Magazine, you know, all the like Mad Magazine, but all from the original like 50s, you know,
yeah.
60s. After my grandfather passed, my grandmother like threw everything out. And it was just—it's just like this kind of sad thing you think back on, and it's like I'll watch Antiques Roadshow or something equally as nerdy as Grimm, and they'll always have like those like steel toys that are going for like ridiculous amounts of money now, and they had those. Cause I remember playing with them when I was a little kid, and now they're all gone.
So what happened to them?
Oh, my grandma just gave them to like the Goodwill. She was just like, "I'm going to clean the house now that everyone's gone."
Maybe the ones you saw in Antique Roadshow were yours.
Were mine, I know. Yeah. And it was bought at Storage Wars.
That's everyone's fear, you know.
That they lose. That's why I have all my Star Wars toys like in the closet in my parents' house, just collecting dust.
How do you know they're still there? How do you know they didn't throw them away?
I know.
You got to check, man. You got to check up on your investments.
I did. I there's not. I don't think there's much. In once they're open,
are they? They've all been opened.
Oh yeah, they're played with. Oh, I mean, yeah, the G.I. Joe. I had the G.I. Joe. Hovercraft, and I used to play with that in the pool, and it would like sink, and the guys would like float to the top. I was like, man, this is worst designed hovercraft ever.
Were you around when the kids had the electric Power Wheel Jeep things?
Oh yeah.
Oh man, those kids.
I was
kids
always jealous of those kids.
Yeah.
I know.
Damn those kids.
And now my nephews, like they have like multiple ones. It's just like, really? I guess.
What do you mean multiple ones?
Well, there was like, you know, They got
like they have like they each own more than
it's
one.
It's like the two car garage.
Like, do I want to take the Jeep out today or the Corvette?
Or the Corvette? Yeah, I mean, because as a toy goes, I mean, they're cheaper now than like those kid iPads that they have, the ones by that Leap company, right. Leap pads or whatever.
Why don't you just get him a bike though?
He has that too.
Make him work.
He's got, you know, the thing is when my sister had a child, younger. She's younger than me, so she also. So the fact that, you know, she's got multiple parents, my parents and her in-laws that right. had no other children, you know, so they just spoil him like crazy. Man. Yeah, he's those getting all kinds of toys.
Kids are real lucky.
Yeah, well, I mean, lucky for the kids, not lucky for the people that have to parent them.
Yeah.
This turns into a parenting show with Chris and Derek.
Two people who don't have children.
Don't have children. I'm not going to ask you if you want to have kids, but are you one
kids.
Of those people that like don't like kids?
I like kids fine in the abstract, you know. I think kids are really cool in small doses. And then when you're forced to sort of, you know, live with them for a long time or like be around them for any extended period of time, that sort of, I mean, that like anything, you know.
Yeah.
I want kids. Everyone should in theory want kids.
Yeah, my goal is to have a child before, like, so I can play catch with them before I'm like too
super
old to
old.
Play catch.
Yeah, there'll be robot arms for you, for old dads like you, dear.
And then, it's because they're going to be a stellar athlete, and I just need to have that, you know, professional whatever player.
You're going to be like Tiger Woods' dad? And
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like I'm super glue a golf club to your kid's hands while he's sleeping?
He's going to be like, you know, 5 months old swinging something. I don't care what it is. I tried doing that with my nephews, and the one just doesn't have the he
killer
just
instinct.
No, he just doesn't concentrate.
Doesn't got it. Doesn't have the killer instinct.
No, he actually is like he's already been suspended from kindergarten for getting into fights
Whoa.
With other kids. But he doesn't use that you know that athletic
energy. He doesn't channel the energy constructively.
Yeah, he's definitely he's got his mind wanders. And then the other nephew is too young to actually figure that out. Although he looks like me, so he's going to be pretty suave.
Again, you're never too young to have a sport foisted upon you. So, you know, be thinking about what he can do with those tiny.
I know the problem is I would love to have my child. This is going into a total tangent, but I would love to have my child play hockey, and hockey's an expensive sport.
Why hockey? It's also dangerous.
Yeah, it's just cool.
A lot of blades.
Yeah, that's why it's cool.
A lot of blades flying around,
you know. It's a cool sport. Be like,
I never got into hockey. Yeah, no one cares.
It's because you're from the South.
No one cares about
hockey. They couldn't have ice. They didn't even have ice down there.
But it's not like you guys have an abundance of ice ponds around. You guys go to a rink like anyone else.
Yeah, but Buffalo does.
Buffalo
have ice pond tournaments and stuff like that.
Oh, come on. This isn't like Peanuts comic strip. Let's be honest. We don't live in that world anymore.
Not in that world, but there is a lot of hockey in Buffalo. Maybe we should. That's something we could talk to Chris about in climate change if the. If Buffalo's
probably
ice
not,
is going to be melting.
Yeah, no, ice skating. Never did it, really.
And you know the first place I ever ice skated was in Florida.
See? There you go.
It's totally random, but
it
was
in
a mall.
It has nothing to do with like growing up with this ice culture or anything else. It's just,
no, in fact, when I tried to do it in Buffalo, it would be like while we were playing hockey, and I was not very good, so I didn't, you know, I just wasn't good at it.
Right.
I'd fall down. I'd have to use the walls to not fall down.
Yeah.
Ice skating. Talking about ice skating in July. Yeah.
You saw your eyes get a little misty there.
I know. I was reminiscing. I kind of would like to be ice skating right now because it is very warm.
I used my AC last night. I'm not ashamed to say that.
Oh, I've been keeping it.
I'm an adult. I can use an air conditioner.
I'm not yet at that point where I keep the air conditioner going while I'm not home because that would be, you know, kind of a dick thing to do. But
yes,
I pretty much have it running the entire time I'm there.
Well, that is wasteful of you.
Well, my apartment is just like long and hot, and like I only have windows
on one
side.
You need to have another fan to transfer that coolness.
I have a fan in front of it, and then another fan in the other room. It's like
maybe it's time for a more efficient unit, huh?
Well, yeah, but then I'd have to spend more money. So it's like, do I spend the money on the electric bill, or do I spend the money on?
Why don't you give those ice skating lessons you're always talking about? Make some extra cash. Get a new AC.
So I think, I'm not sure, Joe? Can you see Joe?
I can't see Joe. He's behind the curtain.
He's behind the curtain. I think he's actually making the phone call now. So we'll stall for a second while he's getting Chris on the phone. And it looks, he just gave me the thumbs up. I think we're ready. That's how things are done here at the Heritage Radio Network. But we're
not fancy here.
We're joined by Chris Mooney, who is a contributor with the Climate Desk and Mother Jones and the host of the Climate Desk Live. Chris, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us.
You bet.
You had a great piece today in Mother Jones about the handful of people in the Republican Party who are sort of trying to sway their fellow Republicans over to buying into the fact that climate change is a huge issue. Why is this taking so long? You know, is it dogma? Is it money? Is it the dogma of money? Like, why is it taking, why are Republicans so obstinate?
It's actually much more dogma than money. We actually have a lot of data on why people deny the overwhelming scientific consensus and the overwhelming reality of climate change. And it is extremely closely tied to being a kind of free market libertarian. It's also tied to being white and male.
Right.
So we know who these people are who do this, and we know why they do it. It's because they have some sort of belief in how markets are supposed to work and how economics is supposed to work. And the idea that economics, you know, could create such a disaster for the planet is really, like, nauseating to their view of the way the world should work.
So
that's what it's coming from.
Couldn't you present the idea to them, hey, why don't we just shift all this economic power that's being generated towards, you know, fossil fuels and coal, and why can't we shift that over to this new technology that isn't killing us? Like, why don't they buy into that argument?
I mean, that was the brilliant idea of the Obama administration in 2008. They called it green jobs. And it turns out that instead the conservatives won the attack against that. The thought was that that would eat away at the opposition, but didn't quite work as well as hoped. I think partly because people also just didn't want to help Obama at all.
Right. And the president, I guess last month, sort of gave this grand speech at Georgetown and sort of threw the gauntlet down. Cap and trade failed, so he was, you know, the executive branch is going to go it alone without Congress. Is there a way for Republicans to still sort of block these changes that the executive branch can make? And, you know, how successful could they be in stopping this, like, second push?
Well, less successful, it looks like. And the reason for that is that, hang on.
It's okay.
I just got into my apartment and there's TV on, so I do apologize for that. Sorry, could you ask the question again?
Yeah, it's fine. The president laid out all these steps last month. He was basically going to say, you know, the executive branch is going to do this without Congress, right? You know, they're going to raise standards. You know, the federal government's going to be on 20% green energy in a few years. They're actually going to start regulating carbon dioxide with existing power plants. How much of this can the president actually accomplish without Republicans? And do you think he's going to be successful in doing that? Or can Republicans sort of keep dragging their feet to sort of stymie all the stuff he announced last month?
No, he's going to be pretty successful because the path has been cleared for doing this. He's always had this kind of ace in the hole because the Supreme Court gave it to him. I think this is going to happen. It's going to happen the wrong way. The president's unilateral way because Republicans wouldn't cooperate. But that's what the president had to do, is he had to do something. And if you look at the economy, you look at cities, you look at the country as a whole, I mean, everybody's greening. Everybody's changing the way they do things. Washington is really actually way behind many states and many cities on this stuff. So the change is coming. It's just sort of like a real foot-dragging kind of thing that's still going on in Washington. And there's, you know, there's a lot of conservatives who want that foot-dragging to end, to their credit, and I was just giving them a little shout-out in some of my recent writings.
Yeah, and could you sort of talk about the Keystone pipeline? I know that's the president sort of kicked the can down the road a few months ago, but do you anticipate, I mean, how much of an issue is this in terms of it being a factor for the environment, and then how much of an issue do you think is the president going to have to concede sort of to allowing the pipeline to be built to get this other stuff done, or how do you see that panning out?
Well, it's, for the people who care the most about climate change, who the president definitely needs to have, you know, really supportive of him, that's sort of their number one issue. So it's going to be very hard after announcing all these climate initiatives for the president to then let the Keystone Pipeline go forward.
Right.
There's this whole really tricky dynamic that's evolving right now that involves basically, you know, gas and pipelines. You know, President Obama and the environmental base are actually at odds about things like fracking for natural gas and whether they are part of the solution or not. And by giving this big climate speech, President Obama mostly got his environmental base to be pretty psyched again. They'd been increasingly angry at him. He got them pretty psyched again because he said all the right things. But, you know, whether that, you know, that's going to stay together, it really does depend on a lot of things, and probably the biggest one is Keystone.
And, yeah, and I'm glad you brought up fracking, because the same sort of refrain that you hear with Keystone and fracking is that if you obstruct, or if you take time to, you know, research more, or if you take time to study the process more, you're costing, you know, the country jobs. How true is that sort of criticism?
Well, I mean, it is certainly true that there have been, you know, big job booms in places like, you know, like the Dakotas, for instance, because of the availability of gas. And I don't think that you're ultimately going to be able to stop a winning economic proposition with environmental concerns. Like, that's probably a political loser. But the fact is that we don't know everything about fracking. We don't know. I mean, there's at least three issues that we don't understand that are pretty important. One of them is, you know, whether it directly pollutes water supplies a lot or just a little, and whether it is part of the inherent risk of fracking or whether it's just something that comes along with a lot of drilling activity. We don't know how much the methane emissions, the sort of accidental leakage, is contributing to global warming when you do all this drilling. And we don't know, and this is one of the ones that's really the most interesting, we don't know what it's doing to earthquakes. And especially injecting fluids that have come up from the ground back into the ground, and whether that's destabilizing things and leading to more earthquakes. And that could be a really big deal.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons. Mother Jones did a big feature on this, a lot of reasons to think that that's happening. So, you know, fracking has not got a clean slate. I don't think that, you know, the critics act like the case is proved. I don't think their case is proved either. So I think this is one that's evolving.
Did you catch that piece that I guess Reason did? It might have been last week, but the second Gasland movie is coming out, or either just came out or is coming out. And they sort of they went through the list of all of the myths, the fracking myths, just to sort of rebut that film. I mean, I don't know if you saw that, but are you of the mind that, look, like, we need natural gas to sort of keep the country running? It is very cheap. You know, we can always study this later. Or, I mean, is it feasible to say, well, look, let's just have like somewhat of a moratorium on this and wait until we actually know what we're doing?
Yeah, I'm sort of split. I mean, a lot of people who read my stuff will probably disagree with me about this, and they'll want the full moratorium. I just think we don't know a lot about it. I mean, there's a scientific range, for instance, for how much the methane leakage is, and that needs to be refined down. I'm not convinced that it's a total disaster for the climate like coal is.
Right.
You know, I mean, my reading of what we know says that the number one worst thing for the planet is burning coal. And
sure.
And insofar as you are replacing that with anything, it seems to me you're better off. So, you know, that's the most simple calculation that I make. You know, if you want to identify who the real enemy is, then you'd want to probably support almost anything that, you know, hurts the real enemy.
Right.
And the real enemy is definitely the coal industry. So, and President Obama's proposals are aimed, it has not been missed, they're aimed at coal. And that's a good thing.
Right. So. And the Republican opposition is, you know, Boehner released that one sheeter. It was basically saying that Obama was attacking the coal industry. How powerful of a lobby is the coal industry?
Oh, I mean, I think it's quite significant, but I think that it's weakening. You know, I was just looking the other day at the stock price, you know, trying to look at what's happened to coal. And the stock price of coal companies has been really, you know, some of them have been really hard hit. over the last 2 years. It's been dramatic. You know, a lot of coal plants are shutting down. Regulations on the horizon. Natural gas is, you know, filling a lot of the gap. You know, I don't think that this industry is what it once was. And let me just add, utilities, which used to burn a lot of coal for power, are saying, oh, well, you know, increasingly there's other ways we can get power to people.
Right.
If I could just take it back a little bit, you'd mentioned that there's a lot of foot dragging in Washington, despite the popular opinion of what would seem like the whole country, or at least the majority of the population. This in politics has always perplexed me. Isn't it Washington's job or our delegates' job to basically be, you know, or do things for the will of the people? Like, why would it take someone who's in office so long to come around to an idea that it seems like most of their, you know, most of the population is on board with?
Well, because these people are elected locally, not nationally.
Right.
Even there, it is bizarre, because I think it was Congressman Henry Waxman just put out something that the president tweeted, so we know it's important. And it was about how there's a gigantic disconnect in Republican districts between the votes of the people they represent, which are all against climate change action,
mm-hmm.
and the weather extremes that the districts have suffered from. Like, you know, we're talking about, like, say, Oklahoma is a perfect example. I mean, you know, they've had these insane temperatures. I mean, you know, or Texas, like, they've been on fire.
Right.
Okay? I mean, and we know that we're doing this, you know. But nevertheless, somehow the message doesn't get through. And the behavior of the elected reps doesn't change. I mean, why is that? I'll give you one reason that is blaring obvious. What's on the television when people get news in these places?
Yeah.
Fox, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually literally that simple.
And isn't that the case for... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's a huge part of the reason right there.
And I was going to say, I mean, it's kind of consistent with things like marriage and divorce rates and abortion rates. Aren't those also related? You know, they're higher rates in the areas that are strictly, you know, voting against those types of initiatives.
Social
policies.
I think so, although I'm less expert. I mean, I think I know that Texas has got something like really bad teen pregnancy rates and things like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's just always perplexed me that for whatever reason, like, it's like this, you know.
They're their own worst enemy, is the idea. In terms of...
Yeah, well, just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just add one thing. I mean, we there's... politics that's developing from public opinion specialists, psychologists, etc. And, you know, one of the key themes is that people don't vote their interests, right? I mean, you know, people don't objectively calculate rationally, you know, what's going to be good for me, my taxes. You know, they're not like perfect economic calculators. There's all these things that are very emotional and very identity driven that overwhelm the rational calculations of what's good for me. So that's a general theme of political psychology, and I think that it helps explain a lot of the discrepancies you're talking about.
Huh. And in terms of the fracking issue, I know in New York, sort of Governor Cuomo has kicked the can repeatedly and has sort of waffled as to whether or not he's going to allow it or if he needs more time to study it. On the federal level, is that how it also is, or is it, you know, I know the president mentioned regulating CO2 in existing power plants, but what sort of increased regulation is going on with fracking, or is there any, or is there any talk of any?
Well, the Environmental Protection Agency is studying it, and
right.
That's the big thing. And the question is, like, when are we going to get some kind of expert answer? Because as a science journalist, when I report on this versus when I report on global warming, it's just the question marks are so much bigger. There's so much less that's known and understood. But, you know, I think that, and I don't know what the federal government is doing, but, you know, there ought to be some moves to regulate the fugitive methane emissions. Basically, I mean, we don't know how much the leakage is of methane into the atmosphere because it's basically getting out when they're doing drilling. But we know that there is some, and we know that methane is a very potent greenhouse gas. So, I mean, that should be something that should be stepped in on pretty immediately.
Right.
I can't actually tell you the state of that. I mean, a lot of people have called for it. What our agency is doing at this moment, I don't actually know.
Right. Huh. Well.
Well, I think, yeah. That's a good, yeah. So I guess, and then you, since you are more on the political angle, I just need someone to tell me if it's going to be really hot in August.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
I think that's a safe one, yeah. I mean, that's not hard. But, you know, one of the interesting things about that's coming out of climate science now is that we've messed up the climate so much, especially the Arctic is warming much faster than the mid-latitude where we live. Most of us live, and so that's...
Nope. I think we might have lost Chris with a cell phone
call. Damn global warming.
Oh, there he's there.
Oh.
You there?
I'm here.
Okay.
How much did you miss?
We got you. You were saying there's something interesting, and then it cut off.
Okay, well, I was saying that the Arctic is messing with our weather in the mid-latitudes because it's messing up the jet stream. And so you could get a long period of one kind of stuck weather that could be extremely hot, then you could have another period of another kind of stuck weather that's different.
Right.
And it'll be stuck for a long time because the jet stream has slowed down. So it's actually more from one extreme to another for a long time than just uniform hot all the time.
Right, and I think we're experiencing that in New York. I've mentioned this a few times where our winters seem longer, but then our summers aren't ending until like November now, but their winters aren't ending until, you know, April. So I can definitely agree with that. I also have this theory. All my theories are a little bit cornball, but I have a theory that New York is now also becoming a much more almost tropical type of climate. Like I feel it's. I mean, obviously the humidity and the moisture that we've been experiencing for the last 2 weeks might play a part in that. But it just seems like everything around is also greener and lusher. So that's my foresight of what's to come. A tropical New York.
Well, look. I mean, it isn't wrong. You know, humidity increases with temperature. I mean, the amount of, you know, humidity that the air can hold increases with temperature is one of the most basic, actually, physical principles that explains a lot of what's going on with the climate. So, I mean, in general, yeah, you know, plants are going to love it.
Yeah.
Until they don't anymore. I mean, until it really fries.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's going to be some of that.
Well, let's try to leave it on something positive. Would you say that that things now on a political landscape are at least pointing in a more positive direction?
Yeah, I see hopeful signs that on the Republican side, there's been some kind of strategic decision to not, you know, be in complete denial anymore. I mean, I'll just give, you know, Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma was the most staunch climate denier of them all for a long time.
Right.
And in his response to President Obama's speech, he purely made an economic argument against what the president wants, not a scientific one. And that's kind of a jaw-dropper for me, who's been watching Inhofe for a decade, to see that. It's like, that can't be an accident.
Right.
You know, so there's something afoot where people are saying, you know, this denial thing is not working. And there's a lot of public opinion data that suggests that people are on the president's side. They get it. There's something weird with the weather. People get that. So maybe they read the tea leaves, finally. I mean, it's really sad that it's taken so long.
Right. I mean, but, it's and I would assume that, you know, in Oklahoma they're getting a little bit of pushback considering the crazy amount of weather that they've had there as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the heartland, drought, heat, fire, I mean, it's got to get your attention to kill
exactly.
In these places.
Well, let's hope it doesn't take that in the rest of the country in order to get some public opinion swaying in the right direction. But Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today. We've, you know, with the current heat wave, we felt it was time to get the answer straight.
You bet. I'm sorry there were a little bit of technical difficulties.
Oh,
there,
no, that's all right. It was just that 3 seconds, I think. Otherwise, it was totally fine.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, cool.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, that was very informative. I just wish I could. I'm still waiting to find someone. I guess maybe he kind of confirmed. I'm trying to get an answer about this. I think New York's becoming
to talk
more tropical.
To someone from Cornell or something.
I know,
we'll have him on.
We tried to get Columbia.
There's plenty
here.
Of shows.
Maybe
we signed a 15-year contract with Heritage. So, yeah.
We've got plenty of years to come.
Yeah.
Maybe Patrick Stiggles from Tyson Dronicus will be able to fill us in. In the meantime, he's here. and he'll be on in about 5 minutes. We're going to play a couple songs, a couple Titus Andronicus songs, get some water through our veins. Got to, you know, it's so hot here. We got to cool down, although we are in air conditioning as well. So, I'm going to play this video. Just came out either yesterday or 2 days ago. It might have been 2 days ago. I get lost in translation, lost in time.
I
know. I just wanted to say lost in translation. Still Life with Hot Deuce and Silver Platter. The video just came out, so I'm going to play that song / video. Let's hope. I every time I hit play on a video, I hope there's not an ad before it. So let's just keep talking a little bit to make sure.
Let's just make sure. We live in.
Oh, we're good. All right, we'll be back in a little bit. We'll be right back.
this drifter moved over to the other side of the river. Now I'm a drop in a deluge of hipsters. Something I got from the first sight said to tie in a cypher city to a symptom. Male, female, they can still the only ones calling me mister. And some of my dreams are coming true.
That was a long fade out. That gave us a lot of time, enough time to kind of get into it.
What can I say? You know, it's the last chord. It's the most important chord. You might as well enjoy it.
It's all about the negative space.
Savor it.
So how are you doing? We're joined by Patrick Stickles.
Hello.
Titus Andronicus. Of Titus Andronicus, you kind of are Titus Andronicus in a weird way. Are you?
I am the artistic director of the band, and when you read the lyrics, you do understand that it's me speaking about my personal experiences, but I'm only one of five members of the band. I contribute one man's contribution out of five contributions.
So you've brought a little crew with you today. Is this that you've been talking a lot about social media? Is this going to be part of your social media?
This is all part of it. I'm here with Siobhan. She's the what did we decide? Junior manager of the web store, is that okay? Or no, pardon me, she's the general manager of the web store. And I am the manager general. So I am the boss. I am the chief executive of the internet store, which launched on a Monday morning afternoon.
And the big,
but she's the general manager because she's a young genius of the internet, a true digital native, understands things about the internet that I could not. Isn't that true, Siobhan?
That's true.
You're way too far away from the microphone. Oh my gosh, she doesn't care.
We've had discussions about length of distance away from the microphone. And part of the web store launch was your singing telegrams. Was that Siobhan's idea?
No, that was my idea. What is my life? How do I monetize my skills? The fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, I sing for my supper. You know, we set up these little events. I say, I'm going to be singing here. Bring money. You can hear it and see it. And I can do that like a couple times a year in a city. That's like as many times as I can do it. But like that's not a reason why I can't have a version of that that I can do every day in the city that I live in. So I asked myself, what are my marketable skills? I use the internet. I'm good at using the internet to promote my insane, inane ideas. And I'm good. I'm not good at singing, but I know that my singing is a marketable skill. It's a commodity that I can sell, that I can monetize. So I just want to ask myself, how can I monetize these things every single day? How do I keep the revenue streams constantly open using just these skills? I can't do anything else. And, you know, at the end of the day, what am I? I'm a prostitute, basically. You know, like I get up there and I, you know, basically get naked, dance around for your amusement and your catharsis so you can feel pity and fear.
But that wouldn't be...
That sounds like a stripper, not a prostitute, if I may interject.
I mean, I am a stripper. Like, I go through many costume changes, and at the end of the show, I'm basically naked. There's a practical reason for that, because of how I perspire. But, like, I know what I'm doing. Like, none of this is by accident. Like, I'm a prostitute. Like, I sell my emotions. Like, you pay to see me do stuff that you wish you could do. I'm sorry. Like, you wish you were this in touch with your emotions and this free to express them, Joe Public, Mr. and Ms. Consumer. Guess what? Like, I do that every day. That's how I live. You can't do that. Like, this is no dig on you, but, like, you have, like, a job. Like, you have responsibilities and obligations to certain other people who have certain expectations about what's acceptable in society. You have to play by the rules to a certain extent to survive. Like, I get that. I respect that. You never asked to be put in that position, but you found yourself in that position just by being born. Guess what, man? I found a way out. Now I go crazy about my emotions every single day. I scream about them.
But you're not going to be doing this in a singing telegram. Are you going to walk up to
it? I am going to scream in the singing telegram if they want to hear a punk song.
What if they're like, it's my 10-year-old son's birthday?
Then I'm going to go and I'll sing whatever the kid's favorite song is, or I'll sing Jonathan Richman, I'm a Little Dinosaur, which I already know how to play, or I'll sing any of the songs I'd sing to my little nieces and nephews. My one little niece, my two little nephews. I'm a professional singer. Like, I have to be able to sing for any audience. Like, and I make a big deal about the shows being all ages. So, of course, I got to be ready to sing for a 10-year-old.
I think you should.
Or a 2-year-old.
I think you should
or
take
a
this.
Fetus.
I think you should take this.
Perform
this.
Songs from In Utero for a fetus. That's a good one.
See, but it would be good to take this energy and, like, take it towards the singing telegram note and then go, like, specialize in divorces or something like, and you can send like really like
wakes.
I do anything, man. Like I got some requests for birthday parties so far, obviously, but I'll do funerals, bar mitzvahs. Well, I'm not gonna do any like bar mitzvahs, confirmations, first communions. No gods allowed. Like that's not part of my model. I don't want any of that dirty money. But I'll do a birthday party, whatever. Like who do I think I am? Like that's not different from getting on a stage in a club that makes money, okay? And it's much actually better and much more ethical than getting on some stage that some kind of corporation paid for that has blood all over its hands, which I do many times a year.
I would agree
with
that.
To survive. I this is a compromise I'm making. Like, I'm giving up my time and I'm doing my effort. Like, I don't care. I love it. I was going to be singing anyway. Like, what difference does it make if I'm singing at my house in the East Williamsburg Industrial Park, or if I'm going over to Driggs Avenue to sing for, what the hell's her name? Brenna or something, which I'm going to do soon. She already shelled out the $50. I'm coming over.
That's awesome. So I was going to ask you that. You've already got some people signed
up.
Oh,
yes, I have. I've gotten many orders for singing telegrams, and I've gotten many orders for Titus Andronicus LP4, Super VIP... What the hell is it? Super VIP edition, I think it's called. $100 item for an album that everybody knows has not been recorded and is not. The songs are not done being written. Everybody knows that. That's no secret. The record will maybe come out in November 2014, that's what I've promised. That's when the $100 investment is going to be rewarded. Until then, it's just $100 right into my pocket, and it is a scam in a way. It is. Like, everybody knows it. Like, I didn't even make the thing I'm selling. The point is, it's an example of the way in which people have been ready to monetize their love for the band for a long time on the internet.
That's a really great
like
social.
P.T. Barnum.
It's a no, but I mean, it's a really it great is. Social
like,
experiment.
I'm an entertainer, you know. Like, and these people, I don't think about them as being suckers, but at the end of the day, they are consumers. Like, I didn't invent the game, but I'm rolling the dice trying to make some change. Trying to make it better and more equitable and more democratic and more advantageous for me, because I gotta eat. Like, I don't get free pizza every day. Most days I buy my pizza, thank you very much. Why the hell shouldn't I buy it with money I made singing? I'm a professional singer, all right? Like, I ride hundreds of thousands of miles. You know, I put 100,000 miles on a stupid van to go around the country singing. Why the hell wouldn't I take $50 to sing after riding the subway?
So I'm really excited. I mean, this
unlimited Metro $100. Card is what for $30 for a week. That's not even $30 for a week though. A month is 100. That's two singing telegrams. I could do two a month.
Yeah.
And then I have free subway rides the rest of the time if I do two singing telegrams. Like, why wouldn't I do that? I'm a professional singer. Who do I think I am? Like, I'm too good to go to some kid's house and sing some song that he likes for $50. Like, I need $50. The only way I can make money is by
singing. I like the social commentary on Kickstarter with the $100 album. Have you sold any of those yet?
Yeah, I've sold a bunch of them.
That's
not like necessarily money. Like, we have enough money to make the record.
Right.
Like, if we needed money to make the record, we would do a concert. Like, we wouldn't do it on Kickstarter. But the point is that people wanted an opportunity to vote with their dollar to say, I support this cause. I like this band. I want these people to have the resources to do the things that they want to do because I believe in what they're doing. And I believe that they, as people, deserve a certain quality of life because that's how I feel about the artists I care about. So I'm going to vote with my dollar, and I'm going to vote in the loudest way possible. And then I'll remember years from now, years hence, that when Titus Andronicus introduced its most outrageous opportunity yet to monetize your love for the band, I was there, and I was one of the first guys to do it.
So let's say someone orders a singing telegram, and you get there, and it's a corporation that actually wants to just record you singing some weird song.
Oh, there's no cameras allowed.
Oh, I didn't. Was that part of the?
I don't have to share all the rules that I have right away. Like, if I show up and there's cameras, I'm going to be like, no cameras. They're going to say, well, we demand the camera. I'm going to say, here's your $50 back, and I'm going to leave. Like, I'm not scared to say no. Like, I'm a prostitute, but I'm a pimp, you understand? Like, nobody pushes me around. Like, I do this stuff on my terms or not at all. I don't care. I love it. And you're going to love it too, but you're going to play by my rules.
All right. I like that. I like that.
You are. Otherwise, here's your $50. Just like if you wanted to go, not to compare myself to Fugazi, because I wouldn't be fit to wipe the shit from their shoes, but when somebody started behaving at their concert in a way that they weren't supposed to, they got their $5 in an envelope handed back to them, and they got their walking papers. They went out the door, and they had a whole stock of envelopes stuffed with $5 bills ready for any jerk that wanted to make trouble. They were out the door, and they had their $5. It wasn't worth $5 to Fugazi to have to go out of their way to accommodate some jerk. And I'm not going to go out of my way to accommodate some jerk for $50. Not to compare myself to them.
I always found Fugazi shows really weird because they would get really angry with people that were like moshing and being really violent. And as a kid growing up in punk shows, I always thought that was normal.
Yeah, but it crosses a certain line. Here's an exclusive for you. I have a big problem in my life. These dumbass bro jocks identify with Titus Andronicus' music because it's vaguely aggressive and has distorted guitars and reflects some kind of inner rage that they feel. And it's fitting that they do because I'm a secret bro and I'm filled with secret rage. But now they come to the Titus Andronicus shows, and a lot of the times they're the biggest people, and there's, you know, enough of them that they take over and their culture starts to dominate what's supposed to be my culture, which is a safe place for everybody. in my ideal universe. Now a girl emails me who tells me that she came to a show recently and she knows that the band has a certain feminist agenda and everything and believes in safety and everybody's rights and stuff. But either way, she crowd surfed at the show. And some bro that was in the pit who was supposed to be supporting her during this process tried to finger her. So, like, this is what I'm going up against. Like, girls are getting sexually assaulted for trying to do stuff at Titus Andronicus concerts that boys are allowed to do. So, like, and, like, as far as Fugazi's concerned, like, nobody cared about moshing and stage diving more than them or took a harder line on it than they did. And yet still, stop me if you heard this one before, but there are nine people out there, nine, count them, who went to a Fugazi show and got paralyzed somehow. They walked into a Fugazi show and left on a stretcher and spent the rest of their life in a wheelchair if they're mobile at all, if they can even get out of bed. Crippled, paralyzed. From going to see Fugazi, the band that had the hardest ever militant stance on no moshing, no crowd surfing. And Ian MacKay and Guy Picciotto, are two of the greatest punks ever to come out of this country, weren't able to save those people or protect them, okay? Because they got guitars in their hands, they're busy. They don't have the opportunity or the means to fight 300-pound guys who like Fugazi because they sound like Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know? So, like, what the hell kind of chance have I got? Like, I'm nothing compared to those guys. And, like, you know? So luckily for me, the real serious bros are at Skrillex concerts. Or whatever the hell people are doing nowadays. So it's not, thank God, rock and roll is not the dominant youth culture.
Is the solution to, like, envelop them with your culture and try and make them understand, or just reject them and cast them out?
I'd love to take them in and educate them and show them, you know, what they really ought to be doing. And I'm going to make a move to do this with this film. I'm going to direct a kind of an educational film about pit etiquette, wherein I'm going to interview the leading experts on how one should behave in a pit, and we'll screen this film before Titus concerts, and we'll see what that does. You know, maybe that'll be more effective than my dumb little speech that I do about personal responsibility and how you can't ask for more freedom than you're willing to grant somebody else. But dumb kids don't get it. They're
like
not
the,
listening.
That's
they're
like
wasted.
the old Civ video where he did all the dance moves. Do you remember that?
Oh,
like
the Another State of Mind thing. Sure. It'll be like that, but it won't be like about dancing. It'll be about respecting each other and not making a weird, rapey environment that no sensible person wants to be
in.
Yeah,
no one wants to be a part of it.
Like, I wouldn't want to be in it. Like, I don't get, like, unlike some of my friends who I won't name, I don't get pissed off when, like, I see that there's some guy in the back row who's got his arms folded and isn't dancing and screaming at the top of his lungs. Like, I hear these young punks criticize these people and are like, hey man, you don't even look alive back there, let's get some energy going. Like, I think that sucks, because when I go to a show, and I go to one, I go to at least 8 of them a month at Shea Stadium, for starters, I like to stand in the back with my arms folded and watch the band as though it's TV. Like, I go out to be entertained, not to be part of some strange, often homoerotic ritual. Not that I don't enjoy a homoerotic ritual now and again, fellas.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about
that.
We were talking about Boy Scouts and camping.
Yeah, yeah.
I've witnessed a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but a few homoerotic, episodes.
I'm into it, man, but, like, you can't force everybody around you to be part of it. Sorry.
And that was the problem with my Boy Scout troop.
Yeah.
They forced you?
It's about stuff between consenting adults. Yeah. Like, if three or four bros want to have a insane pit that's completely insular and it doesn't bother anybody else, then that's their business. Like, kill each other for all I care. Like, if that's what you really have decided amongst yourselves as consenting adults, I don't have any power to add or detract from it.
What about drugs?
Oh, my God. Do every drug. Like, are you kidding me? You think, like, the regular human consciousness, the way that we were born with, is enough? Or furthermore, you think that, like, a regular brain has the power on its own to fight against the thousands of indoctrinations that we're force-fed every day by the sick society that we're imprisoned in until we die, that we're serving out a life sentence in? Like, you don't want to get high? Like, are you insane? Like, do you see what we're in? We're in fucking society. Like, you're not going to get high? What's wrong with you?
We're in the fishbowl right now.
We are, man.
I mean, we got people looking
and we
at us.
Are, we do have people looking at us, man. And this conversation right now is going into a database, dude, along with every text message and every tweet that I sent here. Going on my permanent record, okay? They're watching us right now. Like, you don't want to – you're not feeling paranoid? You don't need to loosen up a little bit? Jesus Christ.
I mean, I can't comment on that because I got to come back next week. But I would agree with that.
Like, what the hell are you going to do? Like, you've got the all-seeing eye of the Illuminati on you 24 hours a day. They've got everything you ever did. They're basically the terrifying vision of God that we were force-fed as children come to horrible reality.
So let's talk just real quick because we've only got a few minutes left. And we are on a very tight time constraint here. And I'm losing – I don't even know what words I'm trying to say anymore. But let's talk about your – you get in a lot of Twitter battles.
Uh-huh.
And you were talking about how you just kind of befriended or one of your online enemies has kind of thrown you an olive branch recently.
Me and my most aggressive and persistent internet enemy of all time – recently found common ground early one morning about 3 or 4 a.m. on Twitter talking about Carl Jung. Since then, we talked about, what was it? He sent something. He still busts my chops a little bit, breaks my balls, but like...
But wouldn't you say
whatever,
that people
man,
that
like, I
have
knew
the
it
most
all
against
along,
each other like, are kind of like have the most in
yeah,
common?
Yeah, like it's obvious that he and I are the same, like... He thinks that he's Batman, and I think I'm the Joker, you know? Like, he believes that I break all these rules that a good person wouldn't break, and I'm like, I think you're totally right. I do break all those rules that you mentioned, but I think that's what makes me a good person. Who's right or wrong? I don't know. Probably neither. So what difference does it make? Like, he needed something. He needed an enemy. I always needed an enemy or two. And the more aggressive they are, the better, as far as I'm concerned. More efficient target practice, really. And this guy was my plaything for most of it. Like, he sees it the other way. Like, he thinks he controlled the whole thing and brought me to my knees many times. I know for certain that I had him on his knees the whole time. I mean, in a way, we're both doomed to forever live on our knees. Like, why are we, you know? I mean, it was society that made us this way, that put this need to fight inside us, or taught us to express the thing that was inside us by fighting.
See, I think that might be human nature, though. I think it's human nature that makes us
fight.
Want
to fight. Yeah, maybe. It might be the animal part of us, biological imperatives to fight over resources and stuff, but it's stupid to do it about internet resources because it's totally unlike the natural world or anything that ever came before it. It's infinite. The resources are infinite, and they all, you know, as it... In its perfect form, the resources are all free and available to everybody. You know, that seems to be the direction that it wants to go in. The white man is going to find a way to pervert it. But how lucky are we that we are living in a time when the dream of the totally, all information being totally free it felt real.
It did.
That's incredible. That's what humans wanted ever since we found out that there was such a thing as information. And that the white man has tried to turn information into a plaything, a luxury plaything of the ruling class.
Or
a
commodity,
internet.
Something you have to pay for.
Yeah, yeah. He tries to monetize information. The internet proves that the natural state of information is unmonetized and uncommodified. It's free. Little B understands this better than anybody.
Yeah, he's really good at it.
That's why he's probably the definitive artist of this century so far, whatever you think about his music. He is what an artist is going to look like in 100 or even like 10 years, much more so than what I've looked like so far.
So in wrapping this up.
For sure.
Do you have anything of the banal nature you need to announce? Like, are you guys, what's
next? The banal
nature?
Well, don't, you know, all you New York City residents listening, don't forget. August 8th, I'm having a big 65th birthday party for my father. It's a free all-ages birthday party at Pier 84 on the Hudson River, brought to you by, I don't know, somebody's doing it.
It's a week.
Us, and it's DuckTales, and it's Juan Waters, who you should also – Juan Waters is a great guy. I saw him at Shea last night.
He's
singer
the
of the Beats, but he has a solo LP coming out. And you should check out the first single, Sanity. It's got this great video. You're going to love it. There's this whole thing. He whole Andy Kaufman thing. He wrestles this all these girls. He's like a woman intergender wrestler.
Wait, you're in it, aren't you? Girls. I see. I'm pointing to
oh, busted.
Siobhan.
I had a whole thing about it. I was gonna be like the coolest girls in it, like this new actress.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This new video. I don't want to say vixen because she's pretty modest character in certain ways.
What's the Fabulous Ladies of Wrestling or something like that? Flo, wasn't that what they were?
Is that what it was?
It was something. It was like the actual women of wrestling back in the old WWF.
Oh,
they were called, like, they had an acronym of their own. Like,
that's funny.
The Fabulous Moolah. Do you remember her? She was like an actual female wrestler.
I think you know about it.
I think it was the Fabulous Ladies of Wrestling. I think that's what it was. But I you know,
Derek's old.
Yeah,
Flo. That's funny because that's like a period joke. Yeah, but let me tell you something. Watch out where you make period jokes, because like. People are watching, like I said. Like, it wasn't the government this time. It was some girl on the internet didn't like a joke I made about a menstruation. I tried to do it to show, like, I don't know. I was trying to show something. I guess
that
I
you can joke against
it,
everyone.
But it was like, it's a joke. Ugh.
Well, we'll save it.
It's tough. Yeah, let me just tell you this, man. It's hard to market yourself as being totally sincere and earnest all the time, and that you would never lie in your art, but also want the same freedom to say anything at all that's funny that a comedian has.
Yeah, it is.
What can I say, man? I just want every kind of freedom. I deserve it. I was born and I survived. I earned every kind of freedom that there is.
So August 8th, that's your
oh yeah, yeah. My dad's my father's 65th birthday party, August 8th on Pier 84.
Are you gonna bring him on stage?
Free all ages show. Well, yeah, sure, why not? I'll do something. I don't know.
Well, you've just promoted it as your dad's birthday party.
It's my dad's birthday party. It's his birthday.
Is he on Telegram?
He was born on August 8th, 1948. 8-8-48. And that's cool because 4 is half of 8. So if you have to have any other number in there, 4 would be the one.
Right. That's like a...
And 65, like...
Who did the 888? I was going to try to make a joke about... Eh, never mind.
65 seems to have something to do with, like... being close to 66, the most satanic number, and my father being quite the good Catholic. And then there's also, but then it's like 6 is the devil, so 5 is, man was 5, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's cool. Yeah. So he's like...
It's a Pixie song,
65,
right?
Yeah, that's how I remember it, Monkey Gone to Heaven. But that's also where I got the idea for my new... anti-God symbol. You know, I always got to be cranking those out. We always could use one more of those to give God a hard time.
So what is... Let's leave it with that. What is the
3-7 upside down, dude, because it's not like 666 like the devil. It's not the devil. It's the opposite of God. It's absolute freedom from morality or authority.
I think
the total absence of authority is 777 upside down. And it's cool because it looks like LLL. Three, I don't know, losers? No, Libre, which is Spanish for free.
I like that. And I think that's the way we got to end. The pizza's here, and Joe has given us the
That's it. Don't forget to check out TitusAndronicus.net. Follow me on Twitter, at TitusAndronicus.
He is a
Instagram, at TitusAndronicus, but replace the A in Andronicus with an underscore.
And he's a very good follow. He's you're entertaining at the very least.
I am one of the best at all of it at all. I'm one of the best at it of all time. Thanks for noticing.
And, well, thanks for being here. Siobhan, thank you for being
as
well.
And that's
great.
And that's Maya.
And Chris.
She didn't say anything, but she was here.
And she's documenting.
That was your name, right? We only just met today.
All the way from Canada.
That was Ed, yeah, all the way from Toronto.
Oh, we could talk Toronto later. I'm from Buffalo. So anyway, Chris, thank you.
Don't thank me. I just work here.
You do. Eh, kind of. It's not a paying gig. Anyway, thanks everyone.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.